The best coaches in the game, we really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets, casket is got. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision, we got.
All right, DFS Army, welcome back to another episode of the Bowl Call Podcast. We got him. He showed up. Chris List from RotoWire. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Alan?
Good, good, good. If for those of you who are fans of Chris List, who are following him over to this podcast to check him out, welcome. You know how much we all enjoy him. And for those of you in the DFS Army who are hearing Chris for the first time, they're not hearing about you for the first time, as we do discuss you quite often on the podcast.
Am I allowed to curse on this podcast, by the way?
Yes, you can. Of course. Yes, okay. Of course.
I saw the one podcast where you discussed the Beat Chris List League.
Right.
That's bullshit. You gave me a C-. That team is dominant.
I did not give you a C-. That was my broadcasting partner.
I should sue for libel. That is ridiculous.
That team is dominant.
What a injustice that was.
He's protective of me, my broadcasting partner. I gave you a high grade. Actually, the years that I've won the Beat Chris List League, I went zero running back in the couple years I did it.
Yeah. No, it's cool. It's cool. It's all right.
You know me, I would never do you wrong.
I take criticism very well, though. Very well.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But this is what we're going to do today. Here's the agenda. Again, I'm excited to introduce you to the DFS Army Bowl Call fan base, and we're just going to do a short bio, right? We're going to go through a little bit of your history, Chris. I'm going to ask you a lot of the questions that I've always wanted to know that you've touched on the air. And also, we're going to go into some strategy questions, some industry questions, we're going to make you the commissioner of the NFL in a little role play. And then I have a special draft, a 3-round draft that I'm going to propose to you that we do at the end just to wrap it up. And you've had no prep for that.
No prep. I don't know what we're going to do. So yeah, I'm good with whatever. I don't care. You know, I mean,
all right.
I'll probably get canceled eventually anyway. Hopefully it's not from this particular podcast.
Imagine this is the one that does you in. Your biggest fan ends up getting canceled.
That'd probably be the way to go anyway.
So let me just get into it real quick. So for those of you who aren't familiar with Chris, Chris is the managing editor of RotoWire. RotoWire has been around for 25 years, Chris?
Yeah, almost 23. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what I wanted to get into. I mean, now that you are at your cruising altitude with, you know, the fantasy industry and you're in your regular rhythm of what you do each year, I mean, start with the history of how you got into fantasy, because before that you were going to be a lawyer, weren't you?
Not seriously. I mean, ostensibly I was. I went to law school. I took the bar. I passed the bar. I was like, this is just bullshit. Like I was just doing it because I didn't know what else to do. You know, I just really didn't have a good grasp of how the world worked, really. So I was like just going down a path that seemed like a path to go down, but there was no reality to it, really. You know, now that I'm looking back on it, it was just faking it, really. And I took a year off after finishing law school, and I lived on the Central Coast of California by myself for 13 months. And it was 1996 to 1997. And I got online, I got my internet connection and email account, whatever. And I'd already played fantasy sports with some law school friends. So it was good for that. They had taught me about it. My buddy, Andy Beam, I just quit his league this year. He was bummed, but in the end, it doesn't really matter. But his baseball league. And
you have that rule about, you know, four leagues is like the correct amount of leagues to be in, right?
I mean, but I was in this for like 20 years, this league. So this is 1995. I started the football league with them. Drafted Jerry Rice as my first pick. So anyway, I was like playing fantasy football online on ESPN and stuff. And I was like, I'm so into this. And I remember coming back to LA to visit my buddy, cause I was on the Central Coast 3.5 hours up the coast. And I was like crashing on his floor and partaking of different mind altering substances. And just remember thinking if I could do, you know, and then it was like Sunday brunch and we were like out. And I kept running to the TV to see the ticker across. You're probably not old enough, Alan. Maybe you are. You're pretty
old. I'm 40. I'm almost 45. So I'm right there with you.
Okay. Yeah. You're a little younger than me, but not much. Mm-hmm. There used to be the ticker on the bottom of the screen where it showed like any update of somebody scoring a touchdown. I was like running out every 5 seconds because I wanted to see what was going on with my teams. And I remember saying to these guys, dude, if I could do a job in this, I would be set. I would be set. And it just turned out that like a month later, my brother knew a guy from high school who went to Northwestern, and he was friends with Herb, and Herb, Jeff, and Peter founded Roto News in 1997. This is like 99 at this point, 98, 99. And so I emailed them and I was like, hey, you know, I'm into this. And so I covered three teams, the Braves, the Cubs, and the Cardinals for them. And I crushed it. And then they gave me basketball teams and some other stuff. It's like 98, 99. And then maybe this is too much detail for you, but
no. This is, you don't understand. This is what the people want to hear.
Okay.
You,
all right.
On this podcast,
this can never happen again. You know, this will never happen again because it's new. This is when nobody was doing fantasy, you know, when it was wide open, you know, this is different. But anyway, it was just back then. And so they were based in Chicago. So I was just writing remotely. There's a lot of guys who write remotely for us now. And then they, they were getting a lot of traffic. It was like 99 and they, or 98, 99. They were getting so much traffic on this free, you know, news website that they had built, that Peter and Herb and Jeff had built. And they got all these suitors like Yahoo, I think, and a bunch of other ones were interested, but they sold to this piece of shit company called Broadband Sports. Maybe Fraudband to anyone that did business with them. Anyway, these guys were just trying to go public. You know, they were just trying to like ramp up traffic. They're like, oh, we'll buy this. It has a lot of traffic. It's going to look good when we try to do our IPO. But the thing was, the company was based in LA. So two guys who no longer work there that you wouldn't have known got into a fight in LA.
Is that why you moved out to LA though?
No, I was already in LA. They were in Chicago, right? So I moved back from Central Coast to Los Angeles. These guys are in Chicago. I'm writing remotely. And then, you know, suddenly they moved to LA to sell their business to this crap company. And then these two guys get into a fight in the office and one of them quits. Like a fist fight, you know? None of the guys that you know of. And one of them quits. And so so they need somebody, you know, all of a sudden. And so I go and interview, and I'm local, and they know me because I've been doing all the write-ups for them, and I'd hung out with them a couple times, played basketball with them. So they hire me in the early 2000s, full-time, and paid me total garbage. But Fraudband was about to collapse at this point, because what happened was the economy in the dot-com collapse started just right when they wanted to go public was the worst timing. And I remember seeing one of the guys, he's a Dodgers beat writer now, one of the guys who interviewed me, who's probably like 10, 15 years older than me, Ken Gernick, he's a Dodgers beat writer. So I'm on an airplane. I remember he told me these guys were just not quite smart enough to go to jail, because had they, you know, the you know, was just trying to pump the stock and get a, you know, pump the IPO and get it public. Anyway, that crashes. Total douches. They won't sell us the Roto News URL back, even though Peter's offering them money for it. And so we just started Roto Wire like a couple months later, and had to grow it, you know, just slowly grew it ever since.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing story. And I love that you fill in the pieces like that, because, you know, you've touched on pieces of the story, especially over the last 4 months where you were looking for content and you really, you know, got into that. So I love those kind of stories. I mean, I remember the 2000.com bubble. I was working in advertising sales. You know, that's my whole background is there, in ad sales, working for CBS selling NFL and DirecTV. And then I just remember all these dot-coms came in and it didn't go well after 2000. So you were kind of faking it, you said, with law. I've heard you say on podcasts that it opened your eyes to what the law system was really about. What is an example, or what did you see that I guess that shatters your belief system?
I mean, it's stuff that everybody kind of knows now, but when you're naive and you're a kid, you think like, well, oh, the system is legit, right? I mean, I think people know the system is totally like collapsing upon itself at this point. But I worked in Manhattan Criminal Court, and I used to just sit there and see these guys get, you know, brought in for sentencing, and you know, there were trials during the week, but on Fridays they would just process like 40 people, plea deals, you know, sentencing hearings, little, you know, things that were 5 minutes, and everybody took a plea. Like everybody did, because if you didn't, you could do 25, you know, or whatever for, you know, I don't know, not 25, but if you're smoking crack and you take a plea, do a little time instead of, you know, do 5 years or whatever. And it was just like these minor drug offenses was most of it. There were like no white guys. And I mean, it was very rare. Mm-hmm. And we're in Manhattan Criminal Court, and you're just seeing these guys just get processed one after another. And it was just like, I don't know. It was just like, dude, this is just a machine, this system. And it's not, you think, oh, everyone goes to trial, but like 1% or 2% go to trial. Everybody's just like, they don't even have to present evidence. They just have the guy arrested. you know, so he's got some overworked, you know, legal aid. Well, legal aid is actually good. It was like the guy who was assigned to you, the public defender. And it was just a very unbalanced system. So if you ever want to get out of jury duty, just say you worked in criminal court and you feel the system's extremely unbalanced, and they'll say, juror number two, you're dismissed.
That's like the George Carlin joke. He said the way to get out of jury duty is tell them that you make a great juror because you could spot guilty people just like that.
Yeah, same thing, right? Yeah, but I was like, nah, you know, it's just a, you know, and of course the prosecutor gets rid of you, so...
Wow, it did. Okay, cool. So for those of you who don't know, Chris is coming to us from Lisbon, Portugal. So I've always wanted to say this, that the welcome back to the Intercontinental Edition. I mean, you know, your marquee line there. But, you know, my wife was asking me because she's become a fan of your Real Man Wood podcast as well. She's a functional dietitian, nutritionist.
It's nice to know. I know there's one other woman at least that listens to it, so she's not alone. Yeah, no.
And I would always bring her little bits and pieces, and you know, normally she's quick to poke holes in everybody's nutrition advice, but she would be like, "Oh, this guy, you know, he's well researched. He understands." So now, you know, the podcast will come out. I'll usually listen to it like, you know, 10 or 12 hours after it comes out, but she's already said, "Hey, did you hear the part when?" So she's actually become a fan. For those of you, we'll give a quick little plug here. Chris Liss's podcast is called A Real Man Would. They cover everything from sports to current events, and Chris gives all his hot takes and interesting points of view on that. And he also now is doing a podcast. RotoWire is doing 5 podcasts a week. You're going to appear on the Tuesday version of it?
Yeah, well, we record Monday. I don't know. So I think it's Monday night. Jeff usually gets it up.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Chris Liss could be heard 4 times a week on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Channel now at noon. So that is appointment radio for me. So it just, I don't know if you, how I came about you, Chris. So how I started listening to you was when I was still living in New York, my wife and I lived in New York City, and I used to go to lunch I worked in Midtown, and I would go to lunch at the Whole Foods every day and just get the salad bar and, you know, just kind of pop on the Fantasy Sports Channel. And the first time I ever heard you guys were doing Chances to Win. So then I'm like everyone else, I wasn't in on the joke yet. So I thought, what bullshit is this? You know, like
people try to bust us. They're like, this is bullshit. This is made up. Wait, this is ridiculous. You know, we're like, no, it's serious, dude. Stop.
That was me. That was me. Yeah, I quickly got it, and I was like, okay. I'm in on the joke, and I like that everybody takes it so seriously. And for those of you who are not sure what we're talking about, Chris, one of his signature, I'm going to call it a bit because that it is the one bit that you guys do, is that after the Sunday night action is over, Chris, callers call up the rare time where Chris takes callers on a SiriusXM show, and he will give them the exact percentage of the chances they have to win. So, and I love that everyone buys into it. So. Also, on your show, here's one of my questions. This is one of the most requested questions that I got to ask you was, you often let us into your personal life. You pull back the curtain a little bit and you let us know what's going on in your world. I mean, your fans, your listeners love it. So your partner, Heather, who you've often referenced, she must have an excellent sense of humor. She's in on the joke. How did you guys meet?
Sort of. I actually met Heather in 1996. I was studying for the bar exam with some friends. We rented a house and we're just like partying our asses off. And he went to Stanford undergrad and so did she. So they were friends. Hmm. And she was doing something in the summer in New York. And so she and a friend came to hang out with us a couple of weekends. But we just were friends. Nothing, you know, it wasn't like anything romantic in any way. And we stayed friendly, but we didn't see each other much. I saw her again about 10 years later at that guy's wedding in Mexico, hung out a bunch, you know, nothing. But then she was living in Argentina for 6 years. And in 2010, she moved back to LA where she's from. And I was living in LA the whole time. And so we just started hanging out and getting together. And then she was like tying up her affairs in Argentina. And I went to visit her that week. I was like, oh, I'll go to Argentina. And so we hung out that week at her house in Argentina. And she was like, you know, wrapping things up there. And then we started dating then, basically when we got back to LA. So that was like 2011.
Wow. And so you're about 15 years after you originally knew her.
Yeah, exactly.
That's unbelievable because that's unusual. It's either people meet, they're really young, or they kind of, you know, nowadays, forget it. It's all app and swipe right. But that's interesting. And then, and just to refresh everybody, how did you guys end up in Portugal?
It's so random. We in 2015 we went on a trip to Berlin and London and Paris, and we thought Berlin was really cool. And then Heather, who's lived in Argentina and just kind of crazy, was like, hey, you know, do you want to live in Europe for a year? And I was like, yeah, whatever. You know, just I didn't take it seriously. But then she started making all these, you know, like looking into flights and rentals and all this stuff. And then she's like, well, you just ask, you know. So the only thing I really needed, I mean, obviously my partners had to sign off on it. You know, I didn't want to piss them off too much, but I was already remote. They were in Wisconsin. I was in LA. So it wasn't a big deal. And then, you know, make sure XM could handle the show. Mm. And I remember Deutsch was like, yeah, we got guys in the UK. I don't see why it would be any different. So we did it. But, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
No, go, but.
Oh, but we're like, you know, you got to go to Europe for more than you can go for, I think, 3 months as a U.S. citizen, no questions asked. Not now with COVID, but back in the day, back in the civilized day. But like, so, but then after 3 months, you need a reason to stay, you need permission. And the Berlin consulate in LA was like, yeah, you'll get it, no problem. So we made all these plans. And like a couple weeks before we went, they're like, no, Berlin said no. You can't, you can go 3 months, but you can't stay more than that. Mm. We'd rented out our house in LA. It was like totally, you know, it was on. So we go to these, like, just work it out in the consulate in Berlin. And we go. And I don't know if this woman was like East German from like the old school, but she did not like us. And we got this guy who was probably made it worse, who, you know, spoke German, a friend of a friend of ours. And he was like this prep school guy. And he's talking to this like hard ass East German woman. She did not like him. It didn't seem, I couldn't really tell because I'm speaking German. And she gave the kibosh on that. So we were like screwed. We're like, well, it'd be horrible to go back to LA after 3 months and rent a place while our place is being rented. But like, if we want to go to Spain, we would have to fly back to LA, go to the consulate in Spain, reapply, and then go. You couldn't do it remotely. So Portugal, because they were down on their luck, you could apply remotely to Portugal from Berlin. So they took us. So we're like sight unseen. We're like, screw it. It's 9 months. Let's make the best of it. So the last day we could be in Berlin, we leave, we go to Portugal. And we've been there ever since.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing story. And, you know, you worried before about too much detail. I always think it's not enough detail. The fans that are tuning into this, they love this stuff. I mean, I know I love this stuff. Again, selfishly, this podcast is all about all the questions I've always wanted to kind of get into a conversation with you about. So I'm going to, and I'll admit, I'm not an experienced interviewer, Chris, so I'm just rolling here, you know?
Okay. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. I'm just talking, you know.
Cool. Now, so, all right. So you're in Portugal right now. Here's the other question that everyone wanted to ask that people tweeted at me. They said, will Heather ever come on the show, your show on SS?
No.
On the podcast.
She doesn't like the sound of her voice, as most people don't.
Nobody does.
Especially when you first hear it, it's very uncomfortable. Secondly, she's not that kind of person, would be terrified to be in front of a camera, in front of the mic. That's just not her thing. Well, I don't think it'll happen.
You're such a skill. Well, the fans do want her to come on, and me being the, you know, the president of the fan club, we want her to come on, and we want to hear, because it sounds like she's one of the few people that can argue up to your, you know, can have a quality argument.
The torture that I experienced trying to deal with those conversations, every time I'm like, just what am I even trying to do?
I'll drop it.
She has zero interest in coming on, and actually, she doesn't have zero interest. She has a negative. She's averse to coming on, and she's a very smart person. If that's what you're asking, but
no one is more
frustrating to get in an argument with.
Anyway. Okay. All right. Well,
except maybe me. According to her, I'm more frustrating than she is to get in an argument. So yeah. Who knows? We'll never know. It's an unresolved question between us.
You talk about that you're frustrated to get in an argument with. I think that's a good kind of leeway. Segue to what I was going to say is that no, you're a skilled arguer, and that's why I always laugh when people try to get into, whether it be on Twitter or if it's on, you know, just on one of your broadcasts, when people try to engage in an argument where I'm like, oh man, it's almost like when Tyson used to get in the ring with, like, who was it? Spinks, the guy that just kind of was looking down, or you know, it is.
I hope they feel that way. I don't know. You know, I think that there's
You're Tyson with the towel on you. You remember Tyson with the towel poncho?
I hope that that's true. Sometimes I feel like, you know, rational argument is, there's no place for it in today's discourse. That doesn't really make any difference at all these days. But
all right. So here we go. So I have a couple industry questions for you. All right. So you know, DFS a couple years ago, 2015, that's how DFS Army started. So right. DFS Army was someone I knew from college, and he started this DFS website, and all of a sudden they started getting a lot of subscribers, and then the subscribers started winning based on, you know, some of the strategies that DFS Army was providing. And last year, actually this past season, they had a regular member win the $1 million. Like, it was, that was, and then, you know, once you do that, people start getting interested in the site. So DFS, now it's becoming sports betting, is the next topic of that people are talking about, and for where fantasy can go. What do you think, other than sports betting, you know, season long leagues are, you know, from 25 years ago, what do you think is the next thing other than sports betting that the industry is the next big game?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I think that DFS, we talked about DFS, we were doing it in the office like a long time ago, like in 2004, we're doing like a daily game where we just write on the chalkboard, we draft NBA players to see who scored the most points or NHL most goals. I like the lottery ticket thing, you know, where you can put in $20 and win $1 million. I think that's, people like that. That's fun. It's torture, but it's fun.
Yeah, but and, you know, you're not, you know, if you just do it like as a lottery ticket, you almost know you're not going to win. That's how I play also. I want to spend $5-$15 and win $1 million.
Right. Know? I don't want to grind out like, you know, oh, I won $100 on average for, you know, over a long time, and I spent all day doing it. So I don't know what the next thing is. You know, for me, like, I used to think that way, like, what's the next thing? You know, where can we do? I like what I like, which is season long. I would do DFS if I could, but I can't in Portugal yet. And I like betting. And so I just look for, like, if I'm making suggestions for RotoWire, I'm like, let's build this tool. This is what I would like to have as a user of the site. But I'm old, you know, I'm not, you know, there's going to be some new shit that I don't even have any idea about. But for me, like, I just think I don't know where the industry is going, basically. Like, it's not even my, like, thing, you know.
You had an interesting thing you talked about. Maybe you could just expand on it a little bit for the listeners. You're talking about a peer-to-peer betting system. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, that would be great. I mean, it would take a lot of tech to build. But why is there this middleman taking so much rake? If you built some gigantic system where, you know, sort of like... it's sort of like social media, rather than having this big centralized newspaper telling you what's going on. It's peer to peer, right? You can communicate with anybody. So I can put $100 in, and, you know, just kind of like DFS. And I say, okay, I want $100 on, you know, and I can make my own odds. Like, so say, you know, it's 35-1 for, I don't know what the real odds are, 50-1 for the Giants to win the Super Bowl. And the real odds should be 60-1, say, but the book will have it at 50-1 because they have a rake. So I say, I want the Giants to win the Super Bowl. I'll put up my, you know, I mean, this is actually a terrible example because no one's going to put up $6,000 if I put it 100, but just say, here's $100, 60-1. If you want to put it $6,000, it goes into escrow. End of the year, one of us, you know, gets the money, gets the 6,100. And there's no middleman. The rake is like, you know, 10 cents to just have this algorithm match you. And if you had millions of people making these bets all the time, the company would make a ton of money, and you would just get rid of this horrible rake where you're -110. You know, I mean, a lot of the online books now, -120. That's ridiculous. You can't win at -120. So I think that would be cool, but it's well beyond my tech skills to even come up with how exactly that would be designed tech-wise.
Yeah, but I mean, it seems like that's totally possible, but yeah, not in the next three, five years. Who knows, you know?
You and I disagree on a better one is a point spread game. You and I disagree on a game, and I have $100 there. You put your $100 there, and, you know, the winner is going to get all except 10 cents of the $200 or all but a quarter of it and 25 cents. And why ever use a sports book again?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question. And, you know, someone's going to invent it because it's just too good of an idea, especially if they can monetize it. All right. A couple of NFL commissioner questions. I'm going to put you in the role of NFL commissioner because, you know, through the years, you've jokingly said a couple of rule changes that people kind of grabbed onto. For example, you know, when you talked about tipping the king, why at the end do we have to, if a team is just, you know, losing, why do they have to run 6 or 8 or 15 times? Just tip the king, you know? I mean, obviously it's because of advertising dollars, but let me ask you a question. So what do you know, I heard you guys, I had 7 pages of questions for you, by the way. Here, this is like, I've cut it down to like 5 because, but I listened to your podcast that you put out last night, I listened to the radio, and you kind of talked about it. So it did spoil them. But here you go. What would you think the NFL should do if the season gets cut short, for example? Like, say after 7 games, it just gets cut short. What do you do about the draft order for next year?
Oh, man, I think that's a small potato. I mean, I'm not saying, like, people care about it, but I think it's a small – like, I think if the NFL season gets cut off, I mean, we're in a world of hurt. I mean, if – you know, the economy – I mean, I've gone into this on the podcast, but it's like, okay, everyone's like, oh, there'll be a vaccine. First of all, I don't trust that at all.
Yeah, but I would say –
oh, no, let's someone else wants to do the experiment. Let me see how it works out. And then I'll be lost in line and be like, okay, you have all the, okay. But okay, so that aside, but assuming, like, okay, everyone's like, oh, you know, let's say COVID just dies down and it's herd immunity, or, you know, it just gets mutates in a way that's weaker. And everyone's like, great, you know, V-shaped recovery, let's go. I think people are going to realize the damage that's done is on. It's like, oh, I didn't water the plant for 3 months. Okay, I'll water it now. Well, it's dead. These businesses can't come back. I mean, there's, you know, restaurants that have shuttered. There's people out of work. Then you add the NFL to that. I mean, and I'm assuming baseball doesn't, you know, it's that gets shut down. The NFL gets shut down. Who knows what the NBA does in that case? You know, it's not just those leagues, but what the NFL is just the biggest sport in the U.S. If that's shut down somehow, I just think, like, the draft is one thing, but what about, like, what are they gonna do with salaries? What are they gonna do with, like, everybody's salary? There's gonna be labor wars. Like, they haven't worked out contingencies for stuff like this. You saw baseball, you know, got a huge problem because they hadn't worked that out. The draft is one thing. I don't know. They'd probably just do it in the order that, you know, they'd figure out a way, but I think that would be like the last minor detail, least of their worries.
So, do you think that this, if players are going to start dropping like flies and opting out, and, you know, for the rest of the season, we're starting to see it already a little bit with some, you know, minor guys, but like you've talked about on your show, there's going to be major guys that get hit. Could this be a season that we see some of the older guys that are always saying they want to come back? We're going to see some Dez Bryant and T.O. and,
you know, they could use them in baseball. You could use them in baseball. They're already pitchers. I just don't want to have to pay Dalton Del Don because I'm pissed. Like, I thought I drafted a good team and now all my pitchers are gone.
Are you still keeping that bet alive?
Oh yeah, that bet's alive. We've made a new one, but the pitching, I just lost like my guys. But baseball could use anybody now. I mean, the Marlins don't even have a team. Mm-hmm. And you wonder if, you know, that they could use veteran guys. Bring Barry, you know, someone said bring Barry Bonds back. You know, he's probably 50, but he could probably still hit 40 home runs with a juice ball, you know.
Just juice it up, right? Yeah. Okay, so 1 to 2 rules. This is another question that a lot of people wanted me to ask. You always talk, you know, you're known for complaining about some of the officiating in the NFL, and rightfully so. They're calling holding calls that have nothing to do with the play. Commercial loads are ridiculous if you're watching regular standalone games. So what are 1 to 2 rule changes that you think that are actually doable that the NFL can institute today that would just make it a better experience?
Testicular shock to a referee that makes an error of commission. It's fine if you miss something that happened. I mean, it's not good, but, you know, it's human. It's hard to referee an NFL game at full speed.
That might be pleasurable to some of them, though. That might not be a punishment.
Well, you got to weed out the freaks. If they like that, then you can't be a ref. But the point is that but nothing would surprise me at this point in society, by the way. But the point is that, you know, the sins of commission where the guy's like, it looked like he fell right when they were running, so I'm going to assume from circumstantial evidence that he got pushed. And you see the guy slipped on replay. You're like, dude, you can't introduce yourself into the game. Don't introduce error. Do no harm, you know, the Hippocratic Oath, like, do no harm. Like, so that's one thing. You can't testicular shock them, unfortunately. But, I think replay should almost never, I mean, I almost think we'd be better off if we didn't have it. There's just no point. It delays the game. It just takes it out of the flow of the game. And
get away with replay and then just live with all those mistakes.
And then, you know, because of replay, you have things like that catch rule disaster that we had. And the goal line thing, did he make a football move? Did he go to the ground? Well, I can't remember. Did he do something going to the ground? A football move. But it was one, like, if you catch the ball, put it over the goal line and then throw it down, it's a touchdown. But if you catch the ball in the end zone and you've got it and then you roll over twice, but on the second rollover, it drops, it's like no catch. And so, like, the problem is that, you know, a catch was, I know it when I see it. You played football as a kid growing up, you know, like, you argue about shit and it's not totally resolvable, but you'll be like, no, that was a catch. I had it. No, it wasn't a catch. People just kind of yell. Whoever yells loudest is like, okay, it's a catch. But you kind of know what a catch is, right? But here, because of replay, you've got to have all these – the replay and the endless dissecting of it makes there needs to be criteria for a catch. And then they put in all these stupid criteria. It's not meant to have criteria. It is simply, I know it when I see it. And so replay has introduced all sorts of lawyering going on. And the dumbest thing is those idiots in the booth who come in and they're the experts on this stuff. And it's like, dude, we don't want to spend our day with you. Like, it's not, we don't want some half-assed lawyer guy who's a referee. Like, that's just the dumbest. That guy's not, you know, bring in, you know, some, you know, comedian or something instead. Like, tell some jokes. Like, this is, we don't want this guy. So, yeah, you know,
like bring in Louis C.K.,
Louis C.K.
at the wrong time.
We just got canceled. That's it. Off limits.
Okay, cool. So, all right. So get rid of replay would be your major rule. And then, you know, you said something on your broadcast today where you're talking about, you know, they were saying how there's not going to be fans there and maybe just do it in four stadiums. And who cares? Even whatever the production value is, it'll still be better than, you know, 1984 production that they had with those terrible graphics and bad camera angles anyway. So,
right. I mean, the production is really good. I like to shit on the NFL because who doesn't? But that production is really good. I mean, the production and the, you know, the whole product in that sense, it's shitty with the rules and everything, but the on-field product and the camera work, that's A+. But I don't think that's the most important thing.
Right. Chris, we're at 30 minutes. I still got more for you. Can I squeeze a few more minutes out of you?
I got time. I got another 20 minutes.
I just want you to know I'm trying to be respectful of your time and keep an eye on the clock. So, all right. So we're gonna move around a little bit. I have this categorized, and I don't even know why I put this. I put rant inquiries. That's the name of this topic. So you actually wrote a blog on Medium one time about how to fix the airport. And that to me was, I think, one of my favorite pieces that you ever did. I'm going to put the link to it in the YouTube video once this is posted. But don't you think with air travel, you know, it's the flights aren't full. This could be a good time to implement some travel. Can you just talk about maybe like the top three headlines of how you would change air travel? I think this would be interesting to the listeners.
So, yeah, they should do it now, but they won't because they don't give a shit and they're too stupid to know what the point is. But as a traveler, I travel a lot, you know, at least till the last 6 months. And I just, the dehumanizing experience of going to the airport makes me dread it, even though I love being places.
Everybody hates
it. It's like something that's just like sickening about being herded in like that. Like it's truly like a submission of control. The 9/11 thing just gave them license to go crazy. Okay. So they always take, you know, it's like, oh, this is for your safety, but it never goes away, right? It's always going
to
be like this.
Right. Well, because, you know, like I was rewatching Mad Men, and they just like go to the airport in the 1960s, and they're like, oh, yeah, they could just show up and buy a ticket for a flight. It's not like that anymore.
Right. And the planes were luxurious, and people dressed nicely. It was a classier era in some ways. Mm-hmm. But anyway, point is that the big things are big picture items. One, separate people and bags as early as possible. Nobody likes to carry bags through the airport. It's hell. And, you know, but the problem is they charge you to check and it's free to carry on. So this is this one of the sources of the misery is when you're carrying heavy bags, you're in like the, you know, gift shop getting a newspaper or whatever you're getting. And you got to like lug it and you're like knocking over the shelf almost with that stuff on your back and it's heavy. And then like, you know, God forbid you got to, you know, use the bathroom. You got to like carry your bag in, you know, it's like
wheel it through the piss on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. It's just there, leave it on the piss stained ground. And then it's horrible. So there should be a conveyor belt around the airport, you know, and your bag should have an electronic tag linked to you. And there's like a conveyor belt and you just drop it in and it's got, you know, it just takes it to your plane. It's got the, you know, your ticket is in your digital ID. And people are like, oh, someone just put a bomb on it. But no, it's the same thing. If you check a bag, I mean, it's at the gate. It's no different. It's linked to you. It still has to go through scanning and whatever. But you when you get to the airport, whether you take a subway or you take a cab or you take a bus or you drive in the parking garage, there's a conveyor belt. You put your ticket, your boarding pass or your ticket that you're issued. It opens up. You drop it in. It puts it on the plane. No bags. Okay, no bags means security is way faster because everyone's got to unload all these bags. Now you don't have that problem. Okay.
And you're talking about, and you, yeah, because you're talking about like right now, it's a reverse incentive. Like they charge you to check the bag, right? You always talk about that, but to bring the bag on, it's free. It should be the other way around.
Of course. But this is not the only problem. So first of all, there's a bottleneck. Now everyone's carrying these bags around as hell, but also it's a bottleneck in security because it takes time to unload all your shit. Okay. So, and to look at all of it, and those guys aren't paying attention anyway. You could probably put a nuclear bomb on the plane. Nobody would even know. But the point is that that, you know, that security theater that you got to go through. Well, that slows everything down because everyone's got to load those bags. So everyone's in, you know, the line. So what, so without the bags, that's much faster, but we could do way better. Instead of an individual scanner, have a room wide scanner and nobody's got bags and you're all, you know, you might have a little carry on, but you're all just walking through and the carry on stuff, you know, or metal stuff, you take it out. It's like one of those bins, but it's a locker that locks. There's a key. Each key has a number. You take key number 11. Key 11, take the key out of the lock, open the bin, put your stuff in it, lock it, put it through a giant conveyor belt that's, you know, 100 feet wide. So everybody's putting on the same conveyor belt at the same time. You walk through the giant scanner without your stuff. If you have something on you, you get like a little beep and a security person makes you put something back into another bin. When you get to the other side, you take your key, you open your bin, you put it back in the bin and you got your stuff all at once. We're not in line and you don't have your bags. Okay. Third thing, when you get to the gate, the dumbest thing is like, oh, now we got to, you know, it's what Jason Collette calls gate lice. You know, he travels all the time. You got to wait. Everyone's waiting like 20, 30 minutes. You're standing up with your bag sweating like, oh, I better get some, you know, some overhead space.
I used to do that until I heard you go on the rant, talk about this. Now I don't do it because, you know, it's just, I don't want to be gate lice.
Yeah, gate lice. And just like, you know, it's just this panic. I'm not going to get the overhead. I'll have to put my bag somewhere where I can't find it or whatever. So then, you know, you got to wait in the jetway and everyone's like, you know, getting on the plane sucks. It takes some person, they got like taking 20 minutes to put their stupid bag in the overhead. Well, now you don't have bags for the overhead because they're all checked because you got rid of them. So everyone just walks right on the plane. That's 15 minutes. Think about this, 15 minutes to get on the plane, usually 15, 20 minutes in that thing, right? And the whole gate lice thing, which is another 20 minutes before that. And getting off the plane is 10, 15 minutes. Everyone getting their bag and you're waiting. Think about that 40 minute total that I said on every flight for every person. Think of how many minutes of one's life. So 40 minutes times 200 people on the plane is what, 8,000 minutes. That's one plane, right? If there's like 100,000 planes, that's 8,000 times 100,000. What is that? That's like, you know, in the billions. And you're talking about billions of minutes of life. You're talking about whole human lives. There's murdering lives by just, you know, who the fuck wants to be on the plane with a bag standing there like an idiot sweating, waiting for people to get out. You can just get rid of all of that. It is so dehumanizing. Like, oh, I've got to stand here until they decide to open the door. Until this person can take 30 minutes to get their 80 bags out of the thing. It's just inhumane. It's inhumane. So this is easy, these fixes. They wouldn't cost that much. The amount of savings and productivity and just decency and just the human spirit would dwarf the cost of putting these things in place.
So DFS Army subscribers, you could see why that I love listening to Chris Liss. I mean, this is just scratching the surface of the kind of stuff he talks about on his Real Man Wood podcast, on his SiriusXM show. So definitely make sure that you and go over to his Twitter, by the way. It's Chris_Liss and give him a like, give him a follow. I know that Chris doesn't like to ask for those type of things, so I'm going to do it for you. But a couple more things, Chris, while we're here, because we're at 37 minutes and I know you got to go record. So it's time for a little draft game. And we're going to get to some football stuff for the people that are asking me, but I wanted this podcast to be a little bit more evergreen because, you know, I like to cut up the clips. I like to send these out and promote, and we'll get to some quick football stuff, but we're going to do a draft. And I know you didn't have time to prepare your cheat sheet. So This is the draft. We're going to do a 3-round draft. Maybe we'll do a 4th round if we're so inclined. We'll do it quick. And you know how much I love your show. You don't let anybody call into your show. And once or twice a year, you let me come in and provide you some content. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a draft where we draft guest regulars of the RotoWire Fantasy Sports Show on XM. So it doesn't mean necessarily the person you like the best, but the people, you know, you're going to try to form the best team of guests. You can't pick Jeff Erickson, who's your co-host. It has to be someone who's a regular guest. So
I don't know if this is a good idea. It's, you know what?
I knew that you would be uncomfortable with this. So I'll tell you what.
I'm uncomfortable. It's just like, you know, it's not like, I mean, I can do it, but it's like, you know, there would just be some hurt feelings. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
These guys come on for free. You know, we don't pay them.
Fair enough.
We promote their stuff, but like, and then to be like, oh, well, you're like my fifth pick, or you didn't even get picked, even though you come on every
week for
2-3 years. It's too harsh.
Fair enough. It brings back feelings of kickball in fourth grade, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, some of them might not even care, you know, but yeah, you know,
I, under,
I
understand, Chris List. I understand it. Yeah.
It's a good joke. It's a good joke, but
it was a failed bit. You know what I'm going to do for my end of the year call? Maybe I'll do my personal rankings, and then
you can do it. Yeah, you can rank them all you want. I'm fine with that, but fine. They probably would like the ones that didn't rank well, but they won't care. It's not personal, but
it's me. Yeah. It's like who the hell am I, right? Fan. So all right, we'll do it that way then. So I certainly will. We'll forego that. All right, couple quick football things from 2020. Now you come out with your non-obvious predictions. We call them bold calls. It's kind of generic, I know, but your 80th percentile outcomes for the most part. What are one or two of those? And I know you do a whole column on it, and that's your exclusive content on rotowire.com, which, by the way, if you want to check out Chris's site, they are a very comprehensive site that deals in all facets of fantasy and multiple sports. I think one year you guys had cricket content up there.
I don't know if we might still have it. I got to check. I haven't looked.
Unbelievable. So you can get I'll do the commercial for you. It's a 10-day free trial. It's rotowire.com/radio. You don't need a credit card. It's not one of those sites where you sign up and you need a credit card and then all of a sudden it starts charging you at the end. It's just at the end of the 10 days, it just stops working. So you can get a free 10-day. See, I've heard it enough, huh, Chris?
Heard that. No, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
So I just need to get you to do my PR for me, do the PR for the site. I'm good with this,
Hey, man, right now I'm a middle school teacher. I'm looking to get the hell out of it. So,
I'll say one thing about you that's nice, even though that's not my
style.
It's off brand for me, but you were a fan of the show 5, 6, 8 years ago, whenever you started listening, and you just once in a while email and said I really like the show, or you just on Twitter or whatever, just be friendly about it. Okay, year goes by, a couple years go by, sort of like okay, that's one of the regular commenter guys, likes the show, gets what we're doing, gets the joke, I guess. And then you were like, hey, if you don't mind, I would like to, I've listened to a lot of the shows and I'd like to compile like the best of, and I'll do a once a year thing. Now it's become a tradition. And I just thought it was a good way to go about it, because it wasn't like, dude, I like your show, give me airtime. It was very respectful, and it was very, you're offering something. You were like, I've got something to bring to the table that you guys don't have, that you're not going to do this for yourself. It's too embarrassing. It's embarrassing when you do it, but but it's fun. It's genuinely fun. Like, we look forward to the segment. We enjoy the segment. And I just thought, that's just a good way. It was just a good, it was slow. It took a long time, but it's a good way to go about it. If you're interested in something, or you think this is a good show, or you like Alan's show, people are like, hey, get me on your show, dude. Like, bugging you. And you're like, it doesn't work like that. So anyway,
And what's it called? It always, that's a good piece of advice to anybody in any industry. Just bring back. I did it because I do it because I love your show, and I'm just such a big fan of the show. And it's one of the shows that influences me to do my podcast and my content. And you hear a lot of it doesn't matter how big you get in any industry, you're going to have people that influence you. And then musicians have rock bands that they look up to, and then their sound sounds similar there. So that happens in every industry. Thank you for saying that. Means a lot. All right. Last 2 or 3 minutes that we have, we're actually going to get to some football. Give us one or two we'll call them bold predictions, but 80th percentile outcomes you think for 2020 that we could look forward to seeing in your column that comes out every year before the season starts.
Yeah. Assuming there is a season. Yes. I like Beckham. I've been on him this year. To me, I'm a Giants fan, so I'm a little biased. He was one of my favorite players. They got plenty for him, and they dealt him, and he was injury prone. He was getting paid the full salary, so as a team move, was all right. But the guys, if you watch the guy play, this is Randy Moss. This is Jerry Rice. This is the greatest receiver of all time. This is a top five talent of all time when you watch the guy play. And he's 27, and it's been 3 years of injuries. He still had 1,000 yards last year. It's not like he had injuries and wasn't in the league or something. It's not like Darius Geis, who's like, college in 2017, and we're still waiting for his first year. But it's definitely worrisome. There's no floor. But he's healthy now, and there's really only two receivers, him and Landry, who's also coming off an injury. And he's 27. This guy's just so good. If he's healthy, he's still got it. And I think Mayfield, I don't know how good Mayfield is. I think he's, his rookie year and his college pedigree mean he's probably more than good enough to support a number one receiver, which is not that hard for a quarterback. So I think he's just going to, he could be wide receiver too. If you just took health out of it and said everyone's going to play 16 games healthy, I might rank him wide receiver 2, maybe Tyreek 2 and Beckham 3, but it'd be right up there.
Yeah, so the ball. Okay, you heard it here that Odell Beckham finishing as a top two or three wide receiver. Who do you still like? Michael Thomas is the locked in one, right?
I think you can't go away from him. It's just too. It's just, you know, it's like a cheat code. It's like he's cheating. He's just like, oh, I stand 5 yards away from the quarterback and he throws me the ball. He's the most accurate quarterback in history. It's like, and that counts as a point, even though it's ridiculous, you know? So
yeah. All right. So Chrysalis, this is the last part of the podcast right here. This is the part you're going to hate, but this is the part you just have to sit there and take it though. You have to sit there and let me praise you for a second. I know you don't like this, but
we'll see, you know,
Chrysalis, you know, I love you, man. You know, I admire your work. I appreciate your broadcast with Jeff every day, your podcast with Dalton. I've literally listened to probably 99% of the shows in their entirety for 7 years. I don't miss a show. Maybe once in a while when there's some baseball stuff with a guest that, you know, that I have some time, that's the only time I would listen. But every minute of every show, I thank you for entertaining me, man. It's like literally your voice is with me 2 hours a day, every day. And I appreciate you, man, so much. And I hope that you continue to do this forever. And, I know it sounds a little fanboyish, but, this to me is one of the best and coolest things that's happened to me in, ever, I have to say. And I know it seems like trivial because it's just a stupid podcast, but I definitely appreciate you very much.
No problem. And, be careful because you are, you know, you may teeter over to total insanity if you keep this up. maybe you're already there and I don't know it. It sounds like you might be, so just be careful, what you listen to, but I appreciate it. It's nice for you to say that. And, it's no problem. It's fun.
All right, man. All right. Yeah. Well, you've heard Chrysalis over. He's from RotoWire from SiriusXM. Hopefully we can get him back next year sometime. We would never bother him twice in 1 year. And you are welcome back here anytime. And Chris, you know, I'll be tweeting at you. You should see, by the way, you know how much I tweet at you and I comment with you. You should see the ones that I erase and end up not doing just to not totally annoy you.
Right. Well, okay. Just don't get yourself canceled. That's all I'm saying.
All right. All right, DFS Army. Until next time, we're here with Chrysalis. And thanks for tuning in. And this will be posted real soon. Bye-bye.
Got the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be PC.